Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
I'm excited to have here in the studio longtime Montana political consultant Jake Eaton. Jake, I've known you since back in my college Republican days, and here we both are now, 20 years later?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Still fighting the good fight, though.
Yeah, you know, I actually got started in college Republicans in Missoula. I mean, going on probably more years than I care to say out loud, but, you know, back in 2001.
Yeah, did you see in Missoula they recently had a die-in? Did you see that?
I did see. You know, the first day I was there, they had three different protests going on campus. And here I am, you know, just this young kid from Miles. I mean, this is nuts.
Yeah, no, I'm showing Jake right now the Missoulian post about a die-in. And I sort of was wondering what that is. Apparently it's people like laying there dead, pretending to be dead, saying that, you know, they died for a billionaire's tax cut.
You know, the billionaire's tax cut is one that's really interesting, because this particular tax bill, right, had more in it for every income taxpayer than we've ever done in the history of the country that I'm aware of. I mean, you could probably go back to like the Bush era tax cuts and say like, okay, those, you know, maybe were disproportionately beneficial to, you know, upper income taxpayers and things like that. But I mean, when you're talking about, you know, Donald Trump's tax cuts and, you know, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, I don't know billionaires making their income off of tips and overtime.
Right, like, or getting much of a benefit from an expanded standard deduction or an expanded child tax credit.
Yeah, taking, you know, if a guy's making $5 million a year, you take that SALT deduction from $10,000 to $40,000. That's not really moving the needle for him. Now, a family of four in upstate New York, maybe, that's making $250,000 or something like that, and you go from, you know, that 10 to 40%, that's a huge difference. You know, and that's basically what it is it's low tax states like Montana, you know, subsidizing these higher tax, you know, blue states. So the SALT deduction is kind of philosophically one that I have a hard time with, because I don't like to subsidize other people's bad behavior. But
well, and I've never understood why you should get a benefit on your federal taxes for taxes you paid to your state and local. It's like, hold on, everybody's got to pay both, folks. You got to pay your state and local, and then you got to pay your federal. Why should you get a deduction on your federal for what you paid in state and local to begin with?
Well, and then you have folks like in Texas, right, where there's no state income, and they kind of have a moderate property tax, but they make all state and locals make all their money on a sales tax side. You're not writing that off on your taxes. You know, you don't get that SALT. You don't get that SALT deduction just because, you know, you paid $6,000 in sales tax on a new
pickup. So Texas and the citizens of Texas are being punished because they have a more effective, a better tax system, aka a sales tax instead of an income tax and that type of a thing. And you get punished for that at the federal level. Yeah, that sounds fair. It reminds me, the original, I remember, if it was a tax foundation or one of those organizations did an original analysis of the original Trump tax cuts, and it was 85% of people got some kind of tax, which I always thought was crazy considering, like, bottom 50% pay zero in federal income anyway.
Right. Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With a mix of clouds and sunshine across the area for today, high temperature readings will stay at right around 60 from Bozeman to the Billings area. For tonight, we can expect a partly to mostly cloudy sky, isolated rain shower chance towards Bozeman. Otherwise, low temperatures in the upper 30s to the lower 40s. Partly sunny Thursday, 51 in Bozeman to 60 in Billings. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Paul Trombley.
This is House Call for Health. Your gut is a powerful thing. Maybe that's why we're told to trust it. But doctors say you should also take care of your gut health, citing critical actions the bacteria inside can play in helping your body properly function. And now more people are getting the chance to learn about their guts from at-home microbiome tests. All of these microorganisms play critical roles in digesting food, absorbing nutrients, and more. And an unbalanced gut microbiome can negatively impact a person's health. Many of these at-home tests require mailing in a stool sample to a lab. Companies then analyze the data and show how a person's gut bacteria levels stack up. But besides lacking federal regulation, some doctors say these types of tests can have limits and aren't intended for clinical use, citing how unique everyone's gut microbiome is and how different tests can use different factors when comparing results. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast's like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen, and subscribe.
Join us again.
Morning in Montana. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
It's David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint. By the way, if you want to call in and talk to the producer, Caden, get a message to me and a longtime Montana Republican political consultant, campaign advisor, business owner, dad, and veteran, Jake Eaton, in the house, in studio. Get it into us on the Montana Talks app or by calling 406-294-0970. So I guess, Jake, big picture here, had the elections yesterday. Some races still undecided, including the mayor race here in Billings, extremely close.
Yeah, I think that one's going to go down to, it's right in that recount territory, so.
Yeah, less than 0.25% difference. It's something like 11,500 to 11,600 or something. I mean,
yeah,
really,
like
100, really close.
100 and something votes is all.
So I guess nationally, I mean, kind of what's your big takeaway or sort of what? How do you view some of these results?
I mean, kind of with a yawn. You know, so you had a handful of polls, you know, for the last few weeks that made New Jersey look very competitive. And I think it was. But at the end of the day, it's still New Jersey, right? And you know, they had a competitive election last time around. You know, Jack lost by, you know, about 3.5% last time. It's going to be a little bit more this time, I think, but not much. It's going to be right in that neighborhood. So that's just kind of where New Jersey is, you know. It's New Jersey.
Yeah, everybody's kind of maybe trying to take a lot away from this stuff. Yeah. And it's like, well, so a couple of things. Number one is, I mean, I'm sure you've heard of the Great Sort and people talking about that for the last 5 or 10 years, just with a lot of the moderates and the conservatives moving from places like New Jersey, New York, Virginia, going to places like Florida, Texas, things like that. I think that's a big part of it. And so it's like, yeah, how much do you really read into this when it's like, look, all the conservatives have sort of already left those states to begin with.
Right. I mean, you look at, you know, what we've seen in Montana and, you know, started a little bit before COVID and then kind of really exploded and is, you know, kind of tamed back down. But, you know, just with the influx of people that we had. And I know a lot of people in political circles were like, oh, no, you know, all these Eastern Washington and Northern Californians and, you know, Eastern Oregon folks that are moving in. And when you actually deep dive down and, you know, fortunately for us, we live in the world of big data, right? So we can find out everything about these people that are coming in. And what we've seen here is they're overwhelmingly, you know, conservative and back where they came from. They're just tired of it, right? And so they're political refugees that are just like, hey, I want to go back to America and somewhere where freedom still exists. And so, you know, they're moving to places like Montana and Idaho and Texas and Florida, to a lesser extent, Arizona. And so I think that definitely creates some headwinds. In Virginia specifically, I mean, it's just kind of a combination of factors, right? And one is the party in power in D.C. always struggles in Virginia. And that's just been that way historically, and regardless of political party. I mean, you know, only 4 years ago when Joe Biden was president and Glenn Youngkin, you know, won the governor's race and Jason Meares, you know, walked away with the AG's race. And I know a lot of folks on the national level that wanted to make a big deal out of it. And I was like, hey, I remember when Bob McDonald did the same thing when Barack Obama was president. So, like, maybe let's not pat ourselves on the back too much. And I think that's where Democrats are at. Now, combined with that, I mean, Winsome Sears probably ran the worst campaign in the history of modern politics for the Virginia governor's race. And that's why, I mean, it's just kind of a double-digit beating. I mean, it would probably be like Ryan Bussey's 2024 campaign and then Winsome Sears and, like, the all-time Hall of Shame worst campaigns ever run. Like, I don't think she was paying her husband like Bussey was paying his wife. I don't think she was using campaign funds to pay for car washes like Bussey was and stuff like that. But still pretty terrible nonetheless.
Okay, and then I saw in California they passed Governor Newsom's little initiative or referendum or whatever it was to, I guess, redraw, do more gerrymandering right. to try to gerrymander.
Like, how can you further gerrymander California? You know, this is a state, on the statewide level, you know, when Adam Schiff was running, and that's, you know, probably the best example, in that Senate race, now it's the baseball guy's name's totally blank on me, but he got like 45% of the vote in California. Republican running for U.S. Senate against Adam Schiff was a very popular, well-known Democrat, who had, you know, I think over $150 million, $200 million in his campaign. So it's like, and there's, what, 15 Republican members of Congress? Like, how do you, what are you going to, they're going to take it down to five? How do you further gerrymander those things? Like, they've been gerrymandering California so bad for the last, you know, 20, 30 years. Like, I really don't know what is left for them to pick up.
Yeah, I mean, some people were trying to say that they think they can get five House seats out of it, but I guess I'm more skeptical of that claim.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they can. So then we're just back to where we are, I mean, with the Texas redistricting.
Right.
And then,
you know, right. So then a couple other things. Number one is I was just reading sort of the Wall Street Journal's takeaway from yesterday, and their big takeaway was like, okay, look, this was good for the Democrats, but the Democrats still have a lot of problems, namely the internal division within the Democrat Party, the internal fighting within the Democrat Party, and that's between the far, far left, you know, the Zohran Mamdani's type, this Virginia AG candidate who endorsed political violence, wished death upon the conservative kids, and yet he still won, and you got those types. And then you've
don't
got...
Don't we kick dogs, too? I mean, apparently yesterday's kicking dogs. Do you see that one?
I didn't
just
see that.
Just to add to his repertoire, yeah.
Well, so he was... And then there was one guy that was on with the Twitch streamer Hassan, and Hassan was using an electric collar on his dog. And so I don't know what these people's problem is with dogs.
I don't know.
Very strange. But I want to get Jake Eaton's comments on sort of the divisions within the Democrat Party. Looks like we've got a message here from Cameron in Billings, as well as Bish in Billings. So we'll read those and get some comments back to you after this. It's David Noble and Jake Eaton filling in for Aaron Flint here on Montana Talks, 406-294-0970, or get the Montana Talks app.
Saving you money, I'm Hillary Barsky. The majority of Americans won't have enough money to retire and maintain their current lifestyle. According to a new Vanguard report, only 42% of Americans are expected to retire successfully at their current standard of living. And the median income individual earning over $50,000 is expected to face an annual shortfall of $5,000 or 13% of their overall spending needs. But there are ways to close the funding gap, like having access to 401k plans through your employer. If you do, you're twice as likely to reach your savings goals. Working until 67 rather than 65 could also add to retirement readiness. Being employed longer also means people can delay claiming Social Security in order to get a higher lifetime payout. And if you are retired and can't make ends meet, think about downsizing to a smaller house, relocating to an area with a lower cost of living, or selling your house and becoming a renter, among other options. Saving you money, Hillary Barsky, Fox News.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. I'll tell you what, we get some great guests on the show. We have some great sidekicks that join us on this show. And we've got friends inside the Trump administration and on Capitol Hill that will join us on this show. But I'll tell you what, the best part of Montana Talks, your phone calls. The chance to get to hear from people all across Montana and for you to be heard all across Montana. Keep your phone calls coming with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and be heard across the state.
I taught for 20 years until I started forgetting my lectures.
Eventually, he had to quit. Getting his early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard, but it gave us time to take control of the situation together.
I can't imagine going through this without him.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/timetotalk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
First month.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordland.
While drought has decimated the size of the U.S. cattle herd, it's the consumer that continues to demand high-quality beef. That was the message that Cattle Facts' Randy Block shared with me last week at Angus Convention in Kansas City.
We don't need to apologize for these high prices. We've never enjoyed a run like this. We've never enjoyed this kind of profitability across the industry. Most of that has come based on the growth in beef demand. It's been producing a much higher quality product that is driving the growth in beef demand. Beef demand's at a 40-year high. What that means to each and every one of you as producers out there is, had demand needle not moved where it is to today, cattle would be, if we had the same demand that we had in 1998, cattle would be selling $1,000 lower than they are today. $1,000. That's a big number. So hopefully that gives everybody a perspective of what we're talking about from demand growth, and obviously that's what's driving profitability.
Block emphasized that ranchers' dedication to producing high-quality cattle and using high-quality genetics to have high-end beef has created the consumer demand we are seeing today for the protein-rich product. I'm Lane Nordland.
Big topics, big ideas, big sky, Montana talks.
All right, got a couple of messages here. Cameron in Billings says, maybe the candidates just didn't get the votes they needed. Just like y'all told the Dems after Trump won his second term, the voters have spoken. I agree, Cameron. The New York City voters have spoken. They want Zohran Mamdani.
Well, and let's be clear, though. Here's the difference between what Cam's talking about and reality is Zohran Mamdani did not win a majority of the vote, right? He won because it was a three-way race.
Hey, and you saw the same thing, and Aaron Flint was tweeting about this in the Flathead or the Kalispell races for mayor, where you had that Sid Dowd guy or whatever, libertarian who... It's classic in Montana. These libertarians split the conservative vote and get Democrats into office.
Right. And they, you know, and then they want to, you know, everybody to feel bad for them because they, nobody likes them after they put Democrats in office. And it's, that's just the way it is. I mean, you know, there's throughout the country, right, there's very few third party efforts that have ever been successful. That's why they call it a two party system that we have in this country. And the way to fix it is not to run as a third party, but it's to fix your party. And we see that's what's going on the Democrat side right now. You have the Zohran Mamdanis and the AOCs and the Bernie Sanders commies and socialists and Marxists and whatever label you want to put on them, with, you know, kind of the more, I mean, normal is kind of maybe a stretch, but, you know, kind of the more traditional, you know, establishment wing of the party. And that's a huge fight that's going on inside the Democrat Party right now. But they're reforming it from within inside the party, not running as third-party candidates to ensure Republicans win, which is what we're doing on the conservative side.
I always think of, you know, the Ron Pauls and the Rand Pauls, who are libertarians, but they ran in the Republican Party, and when they lost the primaries, they didn't run as libertarians. They tried to, in fact, I think you might have even been the one that told me something a long time ago that really stuck me, which is you're a Republican not because you believe 100% of everything in the Republican Party platform or 100% of all, but you're a Republican because we have a two-party system, and in order to effectuate change that you want to see, positive change, you have to work within the party to change the party for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's I mean, that's exactly what we're seeing here, and that's what happens when, you know, when folks don't get their way, right, which is definitely the case with Sid, right? Like, the reason that he got super involved in the Republicans or in the Libertarians is because he'd run in a Republican primary and lost, so he pouted. And we've seen that kind of thing a lot in Montana. But it's just the function of the way the system works. And if what you want to do is put the opposing party in power, then sure, you know, run as a third party candidate, but
as a spoiler,
right? Yeah. That's all you're going to do. But if you actually, and some people, that's all they want to do, right? They don't actually care about solving problems or, you know, doing anything good or, you know, accomplishing anything. They like to throw rocks. And so that's an easy way to do it, right?
And see their name. Maybe they just like seeing their name on the ballot. And if you run as a libertarian.
Oh, yeah, right. And, you know, of course, lefty, you know, air quotes, journalists that we have in Montana will make, you know, never miss an opportunity to call them, you know, and include their criticism of whatever Republican candidate is running alongside the Democrat candidates.
Okay, Bish in Billings writes in, says, red states are going to vote red, blue states are going to vote blue. Extremely difficult to change that. With our news source agenda driven and not reporting the whole truth, it makes it almost impossible to flip a state. I mean, that's kind of similar to what you were saying, Jake, in terms of, look, these are blue states, can't read too much into it. I'm more interested in sort of this division on the Democrat Party. And one reason why is because, so I just got back from 2.5 weeks in Argentina. Went down there primarily because it's a fascinating country to study historically with their finance. I mean, they've defaulted on their government bonds like 10 times.
Yeah.
They're the IMF's largest creditor. They've had 300%, 400%. When I was down there, they're running annual inflation of 30%. They're like happy with that. They think that's really low. But Milei just dominated in the midterm elections, and they did some interviews and things of the locals. And really it was... people were not necessarily voting for Javier Milei's anarcho-capitalist libertarian. They're voting against Peronism, which is essentially socialism and communism. And I see the Democrats potentially getting themselves into a similar situation here in the U.S. where it's like, if you guys are going to put up mom-dommy types and actual communists, first of all, number one, they've never studied history. They don't know what happens when you... they don't know that those policies have failed every time they've tried.
Yeah.
But the Democrats may end up being the Republicans' biggest allies going forward if they can't turn away from the Bernies, the AOCs, the Mamdanis. How big of a problem do you think the Democrats have? I guess we're going to have to go to we've got a 30 or a 60-second news break, and then we're going to get Jake Eaton's response to kind of my commentary here about the divisions in the Democrat Party, how far left they're going. You saw a lot of that heading into 2024, I think, with some of the social issues and the Democrats not getting reasonable. But they're expanding that into some financial and socialism issues. So more from David Noble and Aaron Jake Eaton right after this. In divisions within the Democrat Party. Jake, do you see the Democrat Party having difficulties politically going forward here with the AOCs and the Mamdanis in power?
I mean, huge. And we saw it right in 2024. We watched it on some scale, right? Like, the reason they pushed Joe Biden out so hard and so fast, right, is because of the influence of that wing of the party. And they seized upon the opportunity, you know, to try to launch a coup inside the party. And they got exactly the candidate that they wanted, right? They got, you know, the ultimate DEI hire in Kamala Harris to be their candidate, who had over $1 billion in her campaign account, had every celebrity influencer in Hollywood out campaigning for her, had the entirety of the left news apparatus and the mainstream media, you know, talking about, you know, every day how, you know, Trump is basically going to have to serve in the White House from federal prison, right? And, you know, just everything imaginable that they possibly could throw at the guy. And it ended with the first Republican to win the Electoral College and the popular vote in, you know, over 30 years. So,
Yeah, that's amazing. And a lot of it was because these Democrats wouldn't back off of the transgender issue and boys and girls sports. But then you saw, like, Gavin Newsom, for example, after the 2020, all of a sudden Gavin Newsom is against boys and girls sports. And so you started to see some of these Democrats try to look more mainstream. But then you see the Bernies and the AOCs doing the rallies here in Montana. You see Mamdani winning in New York City. And I don't think I don't think anything is genuine from the Democrats to begin with, and certainly not their sort of, they saw the light on the transgender issue, and now they're just going further left on these social, the fiscal issues with higher taxes and more government spending, which has failed every time it's tried. I don't see them succeeding on that nationally.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's, you know, they're trying to go back to, you know, they saw the just the horrendous opposition to their transgender agenda. It's not that, just to be clear, like, it's not that they're actually opposed to it. They just are opposed to talking about it now, right? Like, that's nothing. The policies haven't changed. We don't want to talk about those now. And let's just go all in, 100% focus on class warfare. Like, that's what they're doing now, right? That's what Mondami has done. You know, we're going to stop these rent hikes. Well, that's going to be great. Who's going to fix your elevator
right
in your, you know, apartment building when they can't raise your rent? Like, you're going to have all of the typical socialist failures and problems that come along with those policies. But it's going to be fascinating to watch. And I think that, like, you're right. It's going to be probably the best thing for Republicans since Donald Trump decided to run for president in 2015.
Yeah, because I think the American people still understand that socialism fails and massive government spending causes inflation, which hurts the poorest of the poor. We know that.
Hey, Sean.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, it's David Noble and Jake Eaton filling in for Aaron Flint here on Montana Talks. Just before the break there, we were talking about these divisions within the Democrat Party. We go to break, and I start ranting about how absurd it is that the commie Mamdani wins in New York City because he's quote-unquote focused on affordability, when his policies of, you know, freezing rents, government-run grocery stores, huge tax increase on the wealthy, all these other different spending programs, all of those things cause inflation and inefficiencies that hurt the poorest of the poor the most. And I'm just left thinking, like, none of these people none of them have obviously ever studied the history of Argentina, just for one example, or the history of the Soviet Union, right, for that matter. Like, these things don't work, and yet they're still winning. You've got, I mean, literally in Argentina, the Argentines would not vote for the socialist, not because they supported, you know, the anarcho-capitalist, but just because they know from their own experience that socialists cause inflation and that destroys your economy.
Right. I mean, the history is just rife with examples of the failed attempts to do this. And even if you look at, you know, these small European countries that have, you know, kind of pseudo success in implementing, you know, these socialist policies. One, they're all tiny, right? And two, their economy's terrible. Like, nobody's starting, you know, a $1 trillion market cap company in Denmark. Like, it's just not happening. There's, you know, very minimal, you know, economic activity going on in these places.
Their salaries are much lower than ours.
Yeah. Because of the limits of the system, right? And that's what happens.
And they have to tax the working poor and they tax the middle class. And that's something that the Democrats are never honest about. It's simply, you cannot tax the rich enough. By the way, it's like the top 10% already pay for 90% of federal income taxes. It's like, how much more can you squeeze out of them before you say that's fair?
Right. Well, and I mean, I read something the other day, and it's like, you could confiscate all of the wealth, 100% of the wealth of everybody on the Forbes 400 list, and it would pay for the federal government spending for less than 3 months.
That's unbelievable. Yeah,
like, it's
unbelievable.
Not an income problem,
right,
that we have in this country. It's a spending problem that we have.
And yeah, that's a great point.
You know, whatever it is, right? You know, this government shutdown, I mean, the whole Trump second administration has been, you know, just kind of a spotlight on waste, fraud, abuse within the system. And, you know, more recently in the government shutdown and the numbers coming out, you know, 42 million people are, you know, going to lose their SNAP benefits. And I'm saying, how are 42 million people eligible for this program? Like, that's clearly, we have moved beyond, you know, the function of serving the neediest and taking care of those that we need to. And instead, what we've focused on is just trying to give everybody something to make them maybe a little bit more comfortable and give everybody something so that we can keep ourselves in power, right? I mean, whether it's the Obamacare insurance subsidies or the SNAP benefits or, you know, the Mike Nelson Billings Chamber of Commerce types that want to redistribute everybody's property tax monies to make downtown whatever they want it to be. I don't even know the right word that's appropriate for the radio. But, like, these things never work out in the long run. And to your point, all that's going to do is they create inflation, they create increased costs. You know, he's got the tax bill, I don't know, building down here in downtown Billings. And it's about 20% more because of all of the additional taxes and fees and special assessments and everything in this downtown area than the building that I own out in the West End.
Wow. Yeah, that's messed up. Hey, I want to get these messages out onto the air. Alex in Bozeman, Clint in Bozeman, Tom Madigan in Billings. Let me read these and then we'll get Jake's reaction. Alex in Bozeman, thanks for sending this in. He says, I'm a Bozeman resident, wanted to comment on the election here. Douglas Fisher won decisively, but I was surprised to see Brendan O'Connor pull 1,700 votes at just 24 years old. No institutional backing, funding, or volunteers. It's quite impressive to see him pull those votes. I reckon this is just the floor and not the ceiling for this young man. Thank you, Alex in Bozeman. Clinton Bozeman says, you're talking about the parties all the time, but not talking about the people representing said parties. You need to talk more about what the people in charge want. Thank you, Clint. Tom Madigan in Billings says, Mamdani being elected in New York, of all places to be elected, it had to be New York where 9/11 happened. He's being sponsored by terrorists. Thank you for that. Menace from Ennis writes in. Menace from Ennis says, guys, you can't have a two-party system. It's unconstitutional. George Washington was very clear on this. You can't separate the country based on parties. Lori in Billings writes in and says, when Grody Gavin keeps saying he hates politicians who lie, I can only think he must have great self-loathing since he lies all the time. Andy in Whitefish writes in, hey, how about the fracture between Levin Shapiro and Tucker Fuentes? Didn't Argentina sell out to BlackRock? Lightbrows in Hardin. Lightbrows in Hardin says, the folks in New York have forgotten when Carter froze the price on everything in the U.S. to try to get inflation under control. Hey, thanks, everybody, for all those messages. Wanted to get those out. Jake, any reaction to those?
I mean, those are some good ones. I like the BlackRock. You know, I think a couple of things, but to the one that was talking about the parties and not the candidates. So here's the thing I think is important. Yes, absolutely, what individual representatives of any party say is important, but they also operate within a party structure and a system, right? So, you know, saying I've got a really good representative, you know, in whatever, let's just say Congress, right, who I really like and he's a really good guy and says good things and then goes to Washington, D.C., he's just one vote in that caucus. And in order to achieve anything, he has to operate inside of that party caucus and be able to maneuver and do things. So, yes, that is important, the character of the people that we elect and the priorities and policies. But especially in a legislative arena, the most important thing is the vote of the party, because in order to achieve anything, your party has to be in the majority. So saying, oh, well, I've got a really good, you know, local representative who's a Democrat, so I'm going to vote for them because I think he's a really good guy, and then sent him, and it cost the other party from from being in the majority is to your own detriment, right? Because you've got to have the majority first to operate inside any legislative chamber. And, you know, we saw that in the Montana legislature this time, right? you know, you got like Lou Jones and a couple of these, you know, big government Republican, air quotes, Republicans, right, who are in Republican districts. They're really not very Republican guys. They're more, I think, kind of big government party would be the more appropriate label for them if we were in Europe where we had 19 parties. And they decided to, you know, essentially hand operational control over to the Democrats, you know, despite Republicans having a clear majority and mandate from voters. So that's why it's more or as important to talk about the party than any individual representative.
And when I use the word Democrats, I mean, I'm just using that as shorthand for the elected officials in this country who are Democrats. And I also use it as shorthand for leftist policies. And my favorite thing is when somebody says, I'm not a Democrat, or I'm a moderate, or I'm an independent, but then they tell me, oh yeah, but I support taxes on the rich. No, you're a Democrat.
Right. You can certainly view yourself however you want, but the reality is that we are in a two-party system, and by and large, most people, you know, overlap a lot with one party or the other.
Yes.
You know, you have very few people who are really, truly in between. But there are a lot of people. You know, Montana's a good example of that. It's less so now than it used to be. But I always used to use the example of the 2004 ballot, right, which is just crazy. Because by almost equal margins, we reelected George W. Bush, elected Brian Schweitzer, a Democrat governor, voted to ban gay marriage and allow medical marijuana. Now, those are some pretty, there are about 30,000 people that I would really like to have a conversation with.
Yeah, totally. And you still see that. You still see that in Montana elections and even in 2024. Now, some of it, it's like, it'll be, you know, the Republicans, the statewide officers will hold, and then we'll win by a certain percentage, and then the conservative, you know, Supreme Court candidate will lose, and you're sort of having the same question. That one is more understandable because there's not the party identification there.
Right. And I mean, you know, it's that crossover vote does exist probably as much in Montana as it, if not more than anywhere else. And it's, you know, it's what kept John Tester around for as long as he did. You know, he was able to eke out a couple of close ones when the rest of his party was losing. But again, you know, I mean, I think, you know, Tester is kind of that example of not, I mean, they try to portray him as a moderate, but in reality, he's not. You know, he's kind of a traditional, you know, establishment Democrat. And I think a big part of the reason he had such a hard time this time is because that's fallen out of favor with his own base. And, you know, he had Democrat problems of not pushing enough, not being left enough. And that caused him just as much problems as, you know, Republicans and independents did.
That kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the divide on the Democrat Party. It's going to be harder for Democrats like Tester to win when you've got the AOCs and the Bernies and the Mamdanis dominating the political party. More after this.
Fox Sports Update.
The Bulls win it! Get it! Time back! Oh, my goodness! Oh, Bulls Nation, they're for real! The cardiac Bulls do it again!
On Chicago Sports Network, a monumental comeback in the NBA Tuesday.
12 seconds left, Giddey on the inbound from Jones. It's your play on it. Carter sets up a screen. Giddey races to the basket, fires it out. Vucevic, the shot.
Vucevic for three. Vucevic steps up again. The grizzled veteran steps up and hits the biggest shot of the season.
On Chicago Sports Network, Nikola Vucevic hit the go-ahead basket with 3 seconds left. The Bulls came all the way back from 24 points down against the 76ers, beat Philadelphia 113-111. Josh Giddey became the first Bulls player since Michael Jordan to record back-to-back triple-doubles. Giddey led Chicago with 29 points, 15 rebounds, and 12 assists. Chicago was 6-1. Philadelphia dropped to 5-2. Best start to a season for the Oklahoma City Thunder. The reigning champs are now 8-0 after last night's 126-107 win over the Clippers in Englewood. The New Orleans Pelicans picked up their first win of the season. The Pels are 1-6 after a 116-112 win against the Hornets. New Orleans said Zion Williamson will miss a week to 10 days with a grade 1 strain of his left hamstring. College basketball, number one ranked Purdue, opened the season with an 82-55 win over Evansville. Sixth ranked Duke beat Texas 75-60. Number 9 Kentucky knocked off Nicholls 77-51. 10th ranked Texas Tech beat Lindenwood 98-60. NFL trade deadline Tuesday, the Jets dealt two-time All-Pro cornerback Sauce Gardner to the Colts and three-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle Quinnen Williams to the Cowboys. The Jets got back three first-round draft picks, one second-rounder, wide receiver Adonai Mitchell from Indianapolis, and defensive tackle Mozzie Smith from Dallas. I'm Jared Max.
Get more on the Fox Sports app and foxsports.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With a mix of clouds and sunshine across the area for today, high temperature readings will stay at right around 60 from Bozeman to the Billings area. For tonight, we can expect a partly to mostly cloudy sky, isolated rain shower chance towards Bozeman. Otherwise, low temperatures in the upper 30s to the lower 40s. Partly sunny Thursday, 51 in Bozeman to 60 in Billings. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. I tell you what, we get some great guests on this show. We have some great sidekicks that join us on this show. And we've got friends inside the Trump administration and on Capitol Hill that will join us on this show. But I'll tell you what, the best part of Montana Talks, your phone calls. The chance to get to hear from people all across Montana and for you to be heard all across Montana. Keep your phone calls coming with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and be heard across the state.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, it's David Noble and Jake Eaton still live from high above downtown Billings, Montana. Looking out, kind of a cloudy day here this morning. And, you know, Jake, you brought up the, what is that, like the, what do they call Voldemort? The name that can never be spoken or whatever. Yeah. You brought up Lou Jones. It reminded me of a story here we've got from Nonstop Local that says, straight out, Montana property taxes decrease due to legislative changes. Taxpayers across Montana are seeing significant reductions in their 2025 property taxes, with many reporting savings of hundreds of dollars. This change is attributed to legislative actions by the legislature. And so what I have noticed, though, is, people that own homestead properties that got $500,000 home, $750,000 home. We all got, you know, the doctors and lawyers and stuff. We all got big property tax reductions. But the rental, the renters in apartment buildings, the business owners, I'm assuming ag, they didn't see property tax reductions.
No, in fact, they saw increases by and large. And that's really the downside of this. One of the downsides, I should say, of this bill that Lou Jones kind of forced down everybody's throat in the last minutes of the legislatures, they're so desperate to do something about property taxes. And there was, I don't know how many different dozen proposals debated throughout the legislative session, but there was no real consensus from either side. And so Lou Jones is a longtime representative from Conrad. He's been there for 20 years. He's chairman of the Appropriations Committee, kind of notoriously, very moderate, big government, left-leaning guy, history of selling out Republicans, voting with Democrats, make deals to get his way and his pet projects and things. So he kind of held it hostage until the very end, which that may be unfair because, like I said, there was no real clear consensus on how they were going to address this anyway. But what they came out with was essentially not actually anything other than just shifting property taxes around the various classes of property so that they could say they reduced taxes on your primary home, which is a, noble goal. But it doesn't actually do anything to address the underlying problem, which is that our property taxes are too high. That's primarily driven by local spending, right? It's not, the state of Montana is not collecting a bunch of money off of your property tax bill. All of the money that they collect is just redistributed back out to schools.
Yeah, so it really raises the question of why wasn't the legislature more honest about that up front? Instead, they're up there, they're acting as if they can give property tax increases. Well, when the locals can just increase the mills or whatever like that, or they just increase their spending and the school boards are increasing their spending and it's not going to, if they were honest about that and said, hey, we really really can't do much at the, you know, focus on your local level. And then if they would have been honest about what they did pass, and instead of saying it was a property tax cut, they could have been honest and said it's a property tax shift, and it would have actually got people to focus on their locals. I mean, for example, here in Billings, we had Jennifer Owen on yesterday. She was saying the city council here doesn't even pass a line item budget. They pass like funds, and then we have bureaucrats running and deciding the spending in this city. And
as when, most do, I mean.
Yeah, and so how are you ever going to get property taxes down in that situation?
I mean, you're not, is the answer. In Billings specifically, I mean, you know, the idea that we just let unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats, you know, answer to a 12-person city council, and that's going to create accountability is crazy.
By the way, which reminds me, shout out to Scott Aspenlighter. He's the only city council person who's actually said a specific plan to cut spending, and it was to eliminate some of those positions, and it would have cut some spending.
Yeah, absolutely. And in any organization, there's opportunities for efficiency, whether it's through staff or other costs. Like, if you take a look at it honestly and openly, like, there's a way to reduce spending inside of every single organization.
We all have to do it in our households. We're all tightening our belts out here. It'd be nice if the government would do it too. More with Jay Keaton right after this.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by N Family Fire and the Ad Council.